Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Ah!
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't.
So you're hurting yourself. You from Nuke State.
It's over. It's over. When I say it's over, everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
I ain't called it. I'll slap the fuck out of one now. Real quick. Just take what it's worth. He will find God.
Look. The main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish average Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity, and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Wait a minute. You know my baby, she won't let me in. I've got a few pennies. I'm gonna buy myself a bottle of gin, and then I'm gonna call my buddy on the telephone and say, so hard all day long. Everything I try to do seems to always turn out wrong. That's why I want to stop by on my way home and say, now let me tell you one more thing. Have a little taste, but don't lose your cool and start messing up the man's place. Ain't no harm, take a little nip, but don't you fall down and bust your lip.
And that's old one from Ray Charles, Let's Go Get Stoned. And it's only 11 o'clock in the morning where I'm at. Too early to go get stoned. I want to cover, now today, this whole month, well, for most people in the continental United States, or the United States, it's Black History Month. We do it a little bit differently. For us, it's Slave Entrepreneur Month. We celebrate 2 months within this month. Slave Entrepreneur Month and Black Townships Month. Slave entrepreneurs, we started this last week. On slave entrepreneurs, we primarily focus on black folk that were born in this country, and they were born legally as slaves, but they became entrepreneurs, and some of them became wealthy. Okay. This is during, you know, slavery times. All right. And then, and there's quite a number of them, believe it or not. We can do one a day for each day of the year, and 4 or 5 years later, we're still doing them. We could probably stretch it out to a decade. There were quite a number of them, but most of us get our slave information from, you know, school books that don't give the full picture because it's only so much you can put into a 5th or 6th grade or even 10th or 11th grade history book. And on top of that, Hollywood basically produces slave movies. All right, they don't even get into the narratives. There's a bunch of narratives out there. So we do Black Towns History Month too. So we sandwich those two themes into this particular podcast. Now, today, and everybody that we featured so far, except for one person, was born into slavery and became a slave entrepreneur, and some became wealthy. All right, now, today we're going to, you know, keep on that. So today's podcast is titled Slave Entrepreneurs and the Republic of Maryland. Now, this one's special because here in 2022, you have some people, not all people, but some people that say, well, blacks can't work together. What I'm going to share with you today is I'm going to give you an example today historically where blacks did work together. They did use cooperative economics. The vast majority of people that pulled off this venture did start off life as slaves. Some of them became wealthy, but they all worked together to, now, here's what I love about what I'm going to get to you today. They did it without government assistance. Nobody was talking about reparations. I mean, most of these people started off as slaves, but they got together, and they, from my research, they organized the second successful Back to Africa. No, wait a minute. The third. They organized the third successful Back to Africa trip, or voyage. That's a better word, voyage. And I'm going to read through this, and I'll tell you where you can fact check me. But they went over and they bought. And if you look on if you're on Blog Talk Radio, look at our scrolling marquee. Now, today we're going to talk about the Republic of Maryland. The Republic of Maryland. A bunch of former slaves who bought their freedom. Some of them might have been born free, but a good number of them were born slaves. And they bought their freedom. Because a lot of people think that, well, slaves didn't get paid, particularly, you know, your reparation crowd. Well, quite a number of them did. And how did they do it? They were, a lot of these people were artisans, dressmakers, tailors, carpenters, all sorts of trades. And they, while they were legally described as slaves, they earned money. Enough money to buy their freedom and the freedom of others. Well, a group of them in the state of Maryland did this and chartered a boat or ship or what have you sailed over to the continent of Africa, and then bought a tract of land. And if you look at our scrolling marquee, I've got a picture. It's two maps there that you'll see the outline of how much land they bought. They formed their own country called the Republic of Maryland. Now, later on, it got annexed by Liberia, and we're going to go through that, how that happened. But it exists today, not as the Republic of Maryland, which was its own sovereign nation, but today it's known as Maryland County, Liberia. So you've got descendants living there that were formerly slaves. Now, I'm reading, as I do practically every day with this, is I'm on Wikipedia, and you can look up Republic of Maryland. So let me jump this off. And then later on, after we discuss this, I want to talk about what's happening up in Minnesota. There's been another bizarre shooting. Here's a guy that was sleeping in somebody's apartment or whatever. There was a no-knock warrant, and they came in, I think, the wrong apartment or whatever, and then they shot and killed, once again, the wrong man. Must be a whole lot of money in Minnesota. Because the way they're going to bankrupt the state. Anyway, let's get to Republic of Maryland and slave entrepreneurs. All right. The Republic of Maryland, also known variously as the Independent State of Maryland, Maryland in Africa, and Maryland in Liberia, was a country in West Africa that existed from 1834 to 1857. That's 23 years, a tad bit over two decades. All right. When it was merged into what is now Liberia, the area was first settled in 1834 by freed African-American slaves and freeborn African-Americans, primarily from the U.S. state of Maryland, under the auspices of the Maryland State Colonization Society. All right. The capital of the Republic of Maryland at that time was Harper, which was Harper, Republic of Maryland back then. Harper, that town still exists today. Still exists today. All right. It was established as a colony on February the 12th, 1834. It had an independence referendum on January 31st, 1853. They had a declaration of independence on May 29th, 1854. So, you know, I got to make a road trip to this place because my birthday is May 24th. They were annexed by Liberia on March 18th, 1857. Their currency was at that time the United States dollar. All right, let's go more and read more about this. The larger American Colonization Society was founded in 1816. It supported the settlement of free people of color to its colony of Liberia, which I would call the second successful back to Africa venture out of the United States. There was initially separate settlements founded by the State Colonization Societies of Mississippi. There was Mississippi in Africa and Kentucky in Africa. Now, we're going to dedicate a couple of days to both of those ventures also. This is way before Marcus Garvey, because a lot of times we just talk about Marcus Garvey. But Marcus Garvey, he did his thing in the Caribbean. The people I'm talking about actually went from what is now known as the United States actually to Africa and had success. All right, last week we covered another person, Chief Sam, and that's in our archives. And I would say I got to line up the dates, but I put him at the fourth trip back to Africa, but I overlooked Mississippi in Africa and Kentucky in Africa. So we have to update that. And anyway, a New Jersey colony was planned. I don't know if they got off the ground with that. In 1838, these African-American settlements were in here's the beauty of part of the beauty of this story, people. They did this with no electronics as we know them today. They did this with no college degrees as we know this today. No help from the government, no internet connection. They were able to do this. And one of the reasons why we're having Slave Entrepreneur Month and Black Towns History Month, and I'm throwing in a new category with this topic today, black, I don't know if I'm going to call it black states or black countries, because they literally went back and started their own state, their own country. There were capitalists all the way. I've said this before plenty of times on this, my house. The United States, basically, that Constitution, and, you know, some people think that, well, say, and it's their right to think it and say it, that this country was not designed for black people. I'm saying that the United States, as we know it today, even at its inception, it was designed for capitalists. Now, once again, you can fact check me on this one. If you look at just this story alone, the first slave entrepreneur that we did this year, which was last week on February 1st, or whenever the 1st was on Mother Priscilla Baltimore. Born a slave, she earned money to buy her freedom and buy the freedom of other relatives. They went to Missouri. Well, first thing, that's practice capitalism. She used capitalism to get herself free from slavery. Then she continued to practice capitalism along with 11 other families, and they bought a tract of land in Illinois, and they started their own town, and that town still stands today, over 100 years old. So the United States, it was designed and built by and for capitalists. Even if you started out life as a slave. Anyway, getting back to Wikipedia. In 1838, these African-American settlements were united into a Commonwealth of Liberia, which declared its independence from the American Colonization Society on July 1847. Now remember, Lincoln didn't even come on the scene and abolish stuff until 1863. These people are what I call real ballers. Matter of fact, I think, you know, it's my house. We might start celebrating July 26, 1847. I'm ranking that above Juneteenth, but that's a whole nother podcast in itself. The Maryland Society, the Maryland colony, remained separate from the Commonwealth of Liberia as the Colonization Society wished to maintain. Now, mind you, these people, the majority of these people, were born slaves. Now, and the United States was formed by this point. If anybody should have gone after reparations, it was them in 1847. But what they decided to do is use capitalism to organize as a group, charter ships, have enough financial resources when they got to the continent of Africa, because they can build their own, they knew how to build roads, houses, buildings, infrastructure, the whole nine yards. They were thinking big. The problem with the critical mass of black folk here in the United States today, in my opinion, and I'm black. I know some of you probably calling me coons and all kind of names right now, but that's all right. On a critical mass basis, we're thinking, when you're asking for reparations, you're thinking too small. You're asking for less than crumbs. They went over and had enough financial resources to purchase attractive land to start their own country. For those tuning in right now, if you go to Blog Talk Radio, go to our scrolling marquee, you'll see it. You'll see what they actually purchased. Now, today, it's called Maryland County. That's due to, you know, politics back then. I mean, but still, we're not even thinking on that level. All we, well, now, I'm not, you know what, I don't even include myself in we. All some people want is a check. These people, through capitalism, in my opinion, that's how you get your reparations, start a business. And that's what these people did. In any event, let me continue to read. On February the 2nd, 1841, Maryland and Africa became an independent state, became the independent state of Maryland, following an independence referendum in 1853. The state declared its independence on May 29th, 1854, and on May 29th, we're celebrating this on It's My House. Under the name of Maryland in Liberia with its capital of Harper, and that's still standing to this day. Okay, let's see. The American Colonization Society was founded in 1816 in part due to the alarms over the violence of the Haitian slave revolution and its aftermath, which resulted in the independence of their country in 1804. Fears were raised about the effects of emancipation of slaves in the United States. In this period, both slaveholders and abolitionists collaborated to project on the project to transport free slaves back to Africa, free black slaves back to Africa, though for different reasons. They suggested that it was repatriation. But by this time, most African Americans were native-born in the United States and said that they were no more African than Americans or British. That sentence is a mouthful in itself. Slaveholders believed that free blacks threatened the stability of slave societies. Nat Turner's rebellion in 1831 panicked Southerners, afraid of another slave uprising, and a seizure of the country had recently happened in Haiti. Abolitionists, many of them ministers, hoped to persuade slaveholders through their religion to manhood free slaves and also worried about the discrimination faced by free blacks in the United States. Those who supported relocation to West Africa believed or pretended to believe that the African Americans would create better, policies. First, as some vague type of colonies, then countries, away from white prejudice, white discrimination, and white economic exploitation, and white liquor. While thousands of free blacks, I'll read that again, while thousands of free blacks did relocate to the colonies, mind you, I did not say a few hundred, but while thousands of free blacks did relocate to the colonies, most free African Americans opposed this project, claiming their right to be their right of birth in the United States, wanted to improve their lives there. Maryland had an increasing proportion of free blacks among African American population. During the first two decades after the Revolution, about 25% of blacks were free, in part because slaveholders were inspired by the war's ideals, practically changing labor needs meant fewer slaves were required. By 1810, some 30% of Northern Maryland blacks were free and were more urbanized, and was a more urbanized region. But so were 20% of the blacks in the southern part of the state. In the next two decades, the number of free blacks increased markedly in the northern part of the state, while many congregated in Baltimore, the state's and the South's largest city at that time. In 1830, Maryland had a total of 52,938 free blacks. That was 58.3% of the blacks in northern Maryland were free, and the black population of Baltimore was 75% free. In southern Maryland, free blacks made up 24.7% of the black population. Now, there's quite a bit to this. But if you go to Wikipedia and look up Republic of Maryland, and I'll let you read from that and draw your own inferences, there's some historical figures here. There are maps. And then people like John Brown Russman or Wes Roram, need to check him out. In 1836, the Colonization Society appointed its first black governor, John Brown Russman, or Wes Roram, 1799 to 1851, who served as governor for more than a dozen years until his death. But that's why we have this month as it is. Governors of the Maryland and Africa, James Hall, Oliver Holmes Jr., John Brown Russworm, Samuel Fort McGill, William A. Pout, or Prout, and Boston Jenkins Drayton. I think he was the last governor of the Republic of Maryland. Okay, also known as Maryland in Africa. So once again, if these people can get together with no technology that we have today, with no help from the government, we're not asking for reparations. That's why I'm not on a reparations bandwagon, just from this story alone, let alone the stories I put out here every day during this whole month. Like, once again, although the Republic of Maryland, there are a handful of stories like that. There's a bunch of black towns that still exist. But when it comes to slave entrepreneurship and former, and some started who became slave masters that started off life as a slave, we can do a podcast every day for every day in a year. And not run out of stores for probably a good 10 years. So I don't do the George Washington Carver, the Harriet Tubman, the Sojourner of Truth, Frederick Douglass, Booker T. I don't do those. This month, we featured people that typically don't get featured. And once again, it's right on Wikipedia. Look up the Republic of Maryland, and after reading that story, if you feel you need reparations, well, let me go to the phone lines here. 314, your mic is open.
Hello, L.A.
Good morning, sir.
You know, that's a good... I was just sending you something on the Freedmen's Bureau. Because the Freedmen's Bureau started right at the end of the Civil War, and people say blacks wasn't allowed to read and write. Well, they wasn't maybe allowed to, but they were taught to big time.
Mm-hmm.
And you should look up the Freedmen's Bureau. And it actually, it has two parts, because one was freedmen from the Native America. They were Indians,
mm-hmm.
who was slaves for black Africans or black. Well, see, here's the thing. You had some black slaves that were slaves to Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they became freedmen. You had black Indians who were black Indians. They were not slaves. And people want to misconstrue that as being so. So the Freedmen Bureau was put in place by Republicans and destroyed by Democrats, especially Andrew Jackson, who took the place of Lincoln when he died. And
I'm on
reason.
The Freedmen's Bureau right now.
Yeah, check that email I sent you because I pulled some things out. And he had a good reason because his reasons were truthful because what they were doing, they was being discriminatory in what they'd done to make things available for blacks and not whites. But, you know, it is what it is. So look that up. And also study Goldsboro, Florida, which had a similar experience as you made mention with the counties or areas that formed in Liberia and ultimately was annexed because Goldsboro, Florida is a railroad town that was created by blacks at that time. And it eventually would be annexed by Seminole County, or should I say Stamford, which lies in Seminole County. So,
Goldsboro, and that's about two counties away from me, if that. Goldsboro, a community and former town in
mm-hmm.
Seminole County, Florida, was founded by the Freedmen's Bureau. You know what? This deserves a whole podcast to itself.
Yeah, it's a railroad town.
You know, Pianchi, you brought this up, because typically when they mention Florida, when it comes to black folk, they bring with victimhood Florida. They bring up Rosewood, and I had a Rosewood historian. I got to get her back on here, Lizzie Jenkins. Although blacks lived in Rosewood, it was an integrated town. They had maybe about 10 or 15 black households in Rosewood. But Eatonville, and now we have Goldsboro. Nobody brings up Goldsboro. I'm so glad you brought that up.
And Stafford was named after a guy named Stafford. I think his name was Henry Stafford. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he was related to the Stanfords that was associated with Dred Scott. But I know he was a Stanford who was an attaché for the United States. And he dealt had business with King Leopold.
Okay.
Over in the Congo. So
well, you know what? Now you
he was white now.
Okay. You know what? Tomorrow we're going to go through Goldsboro, and then I just discovered by reading this article. Man, I got to make a. I haven't been to Sanford, Florida, in a while, but Angola, Florida, was a settlement of escaped slaves. And was established during the Spanish rule of Florida. In 1911, the community was annexed into Sanford, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll cover those.
Sanford did that. They annexed several areas around them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing of the day. You got Eatonville, Florida, who was totally against desegregating the schools.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that one lady, Hurston?
Yeah, they have a special day for her every year.
Yeah, she's from Eatonville. They were totally against segregation of schools.
Right. Eatonville's like 6 miles outside of Orlando, What's interesting is more black folks know about Rosewood, but they've never heard of Eatonville, with town.
And never heard of
Eatonville. That's vibrant. That's over 100 years old, 6 miles outside of Orlando. And it's a nice little community. You know, it's not run down, no ghetto, or nothing like that. You know, it's there are plenty of activities there, but we're on the victimhood train.
Now, here's the thing. If you had Goldsboro, you had Eatonville, you had another area in North Carolina where most of your elite blacks hail from, and I can't think of that name. Most of your elite blacks at that time, they went to that Hillside School, and I think it was another school there. I can't think of the name of it either. In North Carolina, maybe in Wilmington, but I'm not sure. They were they own we. And
right.
They identified based on the ideology of the project that they wanted to get done. Look at all the money that the Bureau, Freedmen's Bureau, spent building schools for blacks. You're talking about a lot of money and a lot of schools. So when people come talking about blacks didn't go to school, now this is in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard some fool say that his grandfather, which may be, I don't know, wasn't allowed to go to school, and he's living today, so his grandfather had to have been back in the 1940s. Well, that's just not true. Blacks were allowed to go to school. Now, they've never been allowed to go everywhere, but when people
right.
tell the story, they try to make it sound like it was everywhere these things was going on, which is just not true.
Right.
And it's disingenuous to make it sound like it was a blanket occurrence across the entire. It was not true. Just like I tell you, the earliest time that on record when schools was desegregated was in 1869, not 1954, the way the NAACP has hijacked it to make it sound.
Right. Right. I'm reading some of your stuff here. Let me put on a music interlude here.
So when people using these words like us and we, that's misleading too. Better define who your us and we are and stop trying to make it sound like people who stand way the heck over there need to come back over here and join in with your we. No, that's your own personal we. That's your own personal us. It does not apply like that, and it's deceitful and disingenuous to try to make it appear that way.
Right. I agree. We're going
to
come back more on that.
Anyway, how did you get back to your show?
We're going to get back to it. We're going to follow up on this in like 3 minutes.
All right, then.
Out.
All right, we're going to cover if you guys want to. What's happening up in Minnesota with this this latest shooting where this dude was with a no-knock warning? They broke into the apartment and shot him dead. If you guys want to chop it up on that, just press 1. But before we get to that, I want to do a let's do a little math assignment here. I want you to look up Maryland County, Liberia. Maryland County, Liberia. Okay. And here's the little math test let's go through right now. And I want you to look at the area, the landmass of Maryland County, Liberia today. All right. And it has a total area of, in kilometers, 2,297 kilometers. If you break that down to square miles, that's 887 square miles. So I want you to go online. I want you to get a square miles to acres calculator. Okay. Once again, I want you to get a square miles to acre calculator. Okay. And I want you to punch in the number, what they have there, 887. All right. Here's another reason why I'm not on the reparations bandwagon. If you are, fine. But these people, now this isn't all the land they purchased. This is what it boils down to today. Because they were having problems with the indigenous Africans, and they needed the military might of Liberia to help them. So in return, they said, well, all right, we'll help you out, but we're going to annex part of what you got. So here's what's left of what they have of Maryland, the state of Maryland, the Republic of Maryland today, which is now known as Maryland County, Liberia. Maryland County, Liberia is made up of, the landmass of it is 567,680 acres. See, we got to start thinking bigger. You know, we got a bunch of us running around whining that we didn't get our 40 acres in the mule. You can go online today, right now. You can go online and buy 40 acres of land, credit check or nothing like that. There are plenty of places, right online. Do it on your phone, computer, whatever your favorite electronic. You can do it. I've done it. That's how I know. So but some of you want that reparations check. These people are thinking on a whole different level. So 100 plus years later, there's over 500,000 acres of land known as Maryland County, Liberia. Now, when they went over and established the state, the Republic of Maryland, it was much larger than that. But through, you know, political wrangling and all that Maryland, you know, I'm proud of the fact that Maryland County, Liberia, it exists today. And you can trace it all the way back here to the United States, to the state of Maryland. Anyway, that, you know, it, once again, fact check me. It's right online. I'm reading all this online. And if some of you want to do a field trip over there one day, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. You know, through the Internet, we can make friends with somebody in Maryland County, Liberia, within the next 24 hours or less. That's number one. And matter of fact, I like that idea. So you know what? I'm going to initiate it myself since it came out of my mouth. I'm going to make me some friends that live in Maryland County, Liberia. We're going to have them on this show. And from that, we're going to plan a Back to Africa trip where we're going to go to Maryland County, Liberia, and check things out. And after you do that trip, you still want reparations.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of the motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Look, we out, man. I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right. Relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
He a man today. He a man.
Did you prime it? That little rubber ball right there next to the spark plug. Gotta push it in three times before you try to start it. Gets the gas going to the car.
You want the truth? I ain't never used one of these. Never had no call to.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick you up for your landscaping skills. All these Spanish, they on paper too. Only use people like y'all. Sometimes it comes back on and sometimes it works out fine.
Well, how long you been uptown?
10 years.
Hotter than a motherfucker out here.
Yeah, it's hot. Every day. And you're going to be riding in the back of that hard truck, bouncing around every day. And your back's going to be yelling at you every day. I used to drive an SL, pretty gold convertible, nice rims. I don't even think on that car no more.
You put it behind you, huh?
Some can't. I'm just saying, you want to stay on the straight. Ain't going to be no big reward to it. This is it, right here. Prime that bitch 3 times. She'll start right up.
All right, that was from the TV show The Wire, which takes place in Baltimore. And one of the reasons why I'm doing this Slave Entrepreneur Month and Black Towns History Month, and we can even say Black State Month, is because one of the takeaways we can get from the Republic of Maryland and Angola, Florida, which is a black township that existed in Florida. You got Eatonville, Florida, which still exists in Florida. You got Goldsboro, Florida, which exists here in Florida. It's because we need to start thinking bigger. In the TV show The Wire, people got shot, you know, over corners, man, that they didn't even own. Whereas these people 100-plus years ago, they were thinking big, man. They were thinking about, they weren't thinking about getting 40 acres, man. Give me 500 acres. You know, give me 100,000 acres. A million acres. They were thinking large. And they had the skill set to build their own buildings and build their own roads and bridges and all that. They had the skill set then with no internet connection, with no social services or nothing like that. They did not suffer from low self-esteem. In any event, tomorrow we'll be back with more. Like I say, we'll feature at least one a day. Today we gave you the Republic of Maryland, Maryland County, Liberia, which that's what it is today. Thanks to Bianchi, Goldsboro, Florida, and Angola, Florida. So you got some bonuses in there today. If they can do it, why can't we? Or why can't you? All right, now, there was a shooting again in Minnesota, again, where a no-knock warrant was served, and once again, a black man was, and he even got the place wrong, he was shot and killed. If you guys want to chop that up, 619-768-2945, that's the number for that. If not, we'll go back to some old audio we have.
Construction. It's about 40% complete. All right, so this is the second Wafati that we have started construction on. People live in here off and on. People come and stay. They come from Airbnb or directly because they're familiar with our website. It keeps the water out. It's not insulated yet. So it can get cold, but the amazing thing is, like, it was going to be a warm day outside. But it's a little warmer outside, and we come in, and do you feel it's already much cooler?
Significantly.
So the thermal mass that surrounds the structure is absorbing the heat from this space and keeping it cool. And when we're done with this structure, we hope that we will have created annualized thermal inertia, that it will be something so that it doesn't require any heat at all, we hope. And so it'll have on two of the walls, and then on the roof, and of course underneath the building, is going to be...
My father died of AIDS when I was 3 years old. My mother could no longer afford to pay my school fees. It was very hard to not be in school. I was in the slums alone. I did not have hope. Then I discovered Chef. My name is Fiona Mtes. I am the junior chess champion of Africa.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Rather than use the term white supremacy, use the term white aggression.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.